All right.
All right. Yeah. You guys want to start the show?
Let's start the show.
Sugar. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Saturday Morning Cereal. Hey, it's me, Dan Grimshay, your host with almost the most. Also joining me, as you could probably guess, is Marquee. Sound off, Marquee.
Hey, everybody. I'm here.
Also joining us this week, we've got Jimmy the Gent Lazinski.
Hey, howdy, hey, listeners.
All right, and you're joining us for another thrilling episode of Saturday Morning Cereal.
The show that celebrates the themes of Saturday Morning Cereal that we not only grew up with, but that grew up with us.
That's right. You write that down. You put it on the fridge. That's A-plus work.
That's right.
There it should be on a T-shirt.
Okay, so this week, this time, this outing, we're discussing superhero female-centric movies.
Yes, that's complicated.
Kind of niche, because we discussed it. We're throwing out stuff like Catwoman, Elektra. Those were kind of anti-hero movies.
Yeah.
You know, Tank Girl. No, not it can't just be a comic book movie, but an actual
like real
supernatural powered superhero that is a woman.
Yes.
There's one that just came out.
Yes, Captain Marvel is breaking records all over the world.
Yep.
Right, and it's I just saw it yesterday. I loved it. Jimmy here absolutely loved it without any argument at all.
100%.
Yeah, and then
100%.
But you know, it's too soon, I think, to talk about that. Too spoilery culturally still. Mm-hmm. But luckily, we can talk about the last one. I think it's finally it's appropriate.
The first one.
Enough people. The
first one. The,
which yes,
the
also happens to be the last.
Last one was Wonder Woman.
Last one's Wonder Woman.
Yeah. Last one's Wonder Woman. Before that, the first one. I think basically the one before that.
Yeah.
By our reckoning.
Yes.
Would be 1984's Supergirl.
Supergirl.
So if you can accept all of that. That's why we're talking about 1984 Supergirl today.
And we talked to Supergirl herself.
Yes, Helen Slater.
Helen Slater. This was
mad about her.
That's not the same Helen.
Different Slater.
Yes.
Damn it.
But we ended up talking to her at Comic-Con in 2018. It was a roundtable conversation. I learned a lot from this interview. And we're going to bring you that audio here in just a second.
Right. But first, let's talk about Supergirl, because I haven't seen this movie in probably 30 years.
Yeah.
I just watched it this morning in preparation for this, and it's pretty wacky. Now, we were talking off mic about, I saw it a lot, and this would have been high school for me, and I worked at a drive-in. So I've seen this movie easily 20 times, more, 25, 30 times, and I didn't remember any of it watching it this morning, how weird it is. It has so, other than the S, has little attachment to Superman story-wise, and they change a lot of stuff. But, I mean, there's some good stuff. There's still some high points.
Yeah.
And Marquee, you just watched it, right?
Yeah, and for one,
rewatched it.
It shares a canon with the Richard Donner Superman movies.
Correct.
Okay.
It's
in the same universe.
Yeah, it's in the same universe. Right. And they actually show a poster of him in the movie, and she talks about him.
Yeah, they reference him a couple times.
And they actually talk about why he's not in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that I think that this movie shows, or that it has, and I've seen a lot of movies, and my God, I was raised by that television. I was raised in front of movies.
Mm-hmm.
No other movie that I can think of that I've seen more than five times. I must have seen Supergirl when I was a kid. I mean, I was born in 77. This mm-hmm. movie came out in 84.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. So I'm not even 10 years old yet. I'm 7 years old right now. But I must have seen this movie 10 to 20 times at least. No other movie that I've seen that many times that I remember so little of. There's something about this movie that is so forgetful, forgettable.
I've seen it and didn't just digest the information, right? It just kind of like glosses over. I don't know if it was because it was so bad or.
Gentlemen, this puts me in a unique and I think a great position because I saw it when I was young as well, about 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And now, of course, apparently I can't even be expected to remember.
No,
you don't remember any of it. Right?
I did not watch
it. Let's take a deep dive on yesterday. What you remember first.
Yeah, yeah. I would like to know what you remember from it.
She had like a skirt instead of the tights.
Go on. Yeah. Go on.
There was flying.
Yeah.
There we go. Okay, I think we about hit it.
It was the 80s. It was the 80s, baby.
Do you remember any of the cast? Because this is actually a big deal.
They did. There was a
Helen Slater.
Okay, yes. Helen Slater, right.
But not the Helen Slater from Mad About You.
No, that's not Helen Slater in Mad About You.
No.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm almost mad about you to going back to that joke.
That's Helen Hunt, by the way.
Okay,
for all you listeners out there, Helen Hunt.
Helen Hunt.
Yes.
Get your Helen straight.
So let's make sure that we're talking about the same blonde here. So,
yeah.
Helen Slater.
So it was an 80s blonde.
It was an 80s blonde. Helen Slater, the only other movie that I remember watching her in, and I've seen it many times, is The Legend of Billie Jean. She was Billie Jean in that movie.
Right.
And she's hot in that movie. I remember her being really hot in that movie. But she she's obviously the sister of Christian Slater, who probably had a bigger career. Would we all agree with that?
Arguably.
Arguably. They're both in The Legend of Billie Jean.
Well, what I actually have to admit here was that until I didn't, at no point did you make me guess who was in it, but up until right when you were talking about it earlier off mic, I thought it was Mariel Hemingway.
It's not Mariel Hemingway.
Who played Supergirl. I don't know where I got that idea.
She's in Superman 3. Mariel Hemingway is in Superman 3. Or Superman 4.
Is that one why I've got her in my head as a Superman adjacent?
She has been in the, is it Sulkin movies? Mariel Hemingway is involved in the franchise, but not as Supergirl.
If you would ask me any time in the last 27 years who played Supergirl, I would have said, oh, it's Mariel Hemingway.
No, it's Helen Slater, which is, I have a couple of thoughts of this film.
To be fair, let me just reference really quick. Helen Slater did have a much bigger career than those two movies. The first one was Supergirl, followed up by Billie Jean. She was also in Ruthless People, Secret of My Success, Sticky Fingers.
Oh, I remember her.
Happy
Secret
Together,
of My Success, she was good. Yeah.
City Slickers, Betrayal of a Dove. I've never heard of that one. House in the Hills. I've seen most of all of these. Lassie, The Steel, No Way Back. She was also, she played her mother, which in the Smallville series,
I remember
correct?
That. Yep.
And she was also Martha Kent in animated DC Superhero Girls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think she actually.
I don't want to diminish her career at all. She's done a fair amount
also,
of work.
She also played a character.
Creep it up on her brother.
She
Chris.
Also played a character in the current Supergirl TV show. So yes,
correct.
She,
right.
She yeah, she once has again. She's definitely. I'm sorry if I disparaged her at all. I didn't mean to.
No,
I'm just saying Christian
at all, but
Slater's
she deserves her credit.
Christian Slater's career, you know, he seems to have starred in a lot more movies and have been involved in a lot more lead roles in television shows that have quickly failed.
Sidebar, my favorite movie of all time is True Romance that he stars in.
I thought you were going to say Gleaming the Cube, but that's okay.
That's my second favorite movie.
That is up there.
I'm a bit of a Slater head.
It's really good. Yeah.
I'm what you call a Christian believer.
Thank you. Takes one to know one.
I think with this one,
finally, now you've got me to half remember or stop putting up a fight about who stars in it.
No, we haven't even talked about it yet because there's Oscar winners in this movie. And that actually kind of brings me up to like the larger point is that this is a B movie with a big budget and Oscar winners in it. right? Mm-hmm. That's what this movie is. Mm-hmm. It is, the script is horrible. What? And it's discombobulated. It's all over the place. It's pieced together. It looks like somebody just shot whatever they could think of and then just edited a bunch of stuff together. Mm-hmm. Like, it just doesn't tie very well. I come to find out recently, thanks to Jimmy here, that my very, very favorite scene is her learning how to fly. And it's like this like kind of trapeze kind of flying sequence. Mm-hmm. It was cut out of the original version.
And the original American release, that was deleted, yeah.
Yeah.
And we were, again, off mic discussing that. That's some of the best on-screen flying, like wirework, and you've seen in American cinema.
Yeah, and again, yeah. I just watched it again yesterday, so I don't even know if that was the scene that I saw when I was a kid, right? Mm. But that's the scene that I remember the most. But it's just like, this is a B-movie. It's really cheesy. It's really stupid. But it's got Oscar winners. Peter O'Toole is in this movie.
Yeah, they're definitely trying to follow the lead of the Superman movies,
With Brando.
The framework of that with Brando. So they've got Mia Farrow. Peter O'Toole has a pretty big role in that, although he's not great in that role, I don't think. Faye Dunaway is the lead, the top billing on that.
Yeah. So she's the Gene Hackman.
Mm-hmm.
And then Peter O'Toole
would be your Brando, yeah.
And mm-hmm. Mia Farrow is there for 5 minutes. Hardly even matters.
But she might be your Miss Tessmacher, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if we're analoging it.
Yes, Miss Tessmacher. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess so. Although there is a Tessmacher character in it as well, in a way. But this is not a good movie. By any stretch of the imagination.
Well, now hold on, because I still have some fond memories. Specific memories, but
you want me to go over this?
Start at the top. Tell me what the opening. Does it drop the ball in the credits or something?
Well, okay. I mean, it's funny that you point that out. In the actual credits, it opens up in the same vein of the Richard Donner Superman movies. It's like kind of the actual title, the actual text looked like ice, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's very shimmery, but instead of a background, it's kind of red. And it's just like, you know, instead of the John Williams, you hear like a synthesized version of John Williams.
But we still kind of have the words flying at us.
Yeah, kind
and
of flying at
swooping
you.
Away.
Okay, so the same thing.
That's a good way to think of it.
Just kind of modernized for the 80s a little bit, like you said, with the synthesizer and everything's shiny.
So difference. Yeah.
And it's got a flavor of that Dino De Laurentiis Flash Gordon sky in the background, you know?
The very, very big words coming out of Jimmy here. But yeah, I agree with that.
I am smart.
But what I remembered of it, there was a couple of things that I remembered. One of them is Peter O'Toole wearing... It's like a Bill Cosby sweater, but as a poncho.
I was laughing because that's such a weird choice to put him in that. He's so small framed to begin with. And they're like, he's on this giant city Argo from Krypton. Let's just put him in this weird Bill Cosby sweater. But no. Let's make it about 8 sizes too big and throw a belt on him. It'll be fine.
It's a poncho.
They'll get that he's from another planet.
It's horrible.
Were they just using Marlon Brando's wardrobe?
It might have been left over. They might have had the rights to it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But the weird thing is that what I remembered of this movie is basically a mix of the beginning and the end of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And just to do my best to catch you up to this, Shay. Mm-hmm. It starts off in a Kryptonian city, which should be Kandor. Because that's
right,
in all the comics.
I'm pretty sure that's where she's from in the comics.
But it's not. It's Argo City. I'm not sure, again, where Argo fits into the canon in the comic books or what version of Superman Argo is.
In the movie, it exists in a pocket of trans-dimensional space
for some reason. Yes.
Maybe they got blown away from Krypton and... But they never addressed
Peter O'Toole
never
does... He's the uncle here.
Okay. So he's the uncle, and
Uncle
he's
Peter
in
named
some
Zoltar.
Kind of
Zoltar.
Yeah, so he is a Tar. He's not an L.
Right.
Kara okay. L. So Kara L.
Super by marriage.
Yes.
Kara Zor-El.
Super by blood.
Super by blood.
So yeah, Kara is an L, Kara L, and then her dad is Zor-El. And her dad does have a role in this film. It's just in the beginning. And then obviously we know Kal-El and Jor-El are her cousin, uncle and cousin.
Her dad, Zor-El, seems very unplussed by the fact that they have 5 days to live and everything's going to die. He's just very straight faced, like, well, we've only got 5 days. We must do something.
Well, yeah, he turns into Ronnie Dangerfield. He's like, oh, fuck it. Just like this whole party. So yeah, they're all in this town, and Peter O'Toole's character, the uncle, what's his name?
Zoltar.
Zoltar.
Hail Zoltar.
Yeah, Hail Zoltar. He ends up having this orb, and the orb is the power of the city.
Omega Hedron.
The Omega Hedron is the power of the city.
I'm sorry. I feel like I need to just sort of catch up on my own here for just 1 second. So to recap.
I'm 2 minutes in, by the way. But go ahead if you want to
just
recap.
See if I can follow. We haven't even
met Supergirl yet.
Yeah. But hold on, go ahead.
But it's opening on Peter O'Toole and Marlon Brando's sweater on
a Bill Cosby sweater that's the size of Marlon Brando.
Okay.
Yeah.
On a ship, on a planet city that they built in a trans-dimensional space.
Yes.
And his brother has. Okay, we haven't even gotten to Supergirl. So his brother is there, says, oh, we've got 5 days to live.
Not yet. He was jumping ahead a little bit. Almost. So I'm
at minute seven. We're still, still at minute
but two. But at around minute two.
Things heat up pretty quick.
Peter O'Toole is holding a David Bowie glass ball that powers this trans-dimensional city, ship, state.
It actually looks more.
That's the power for their city.
Okay. It actually looks more like the thermal detonator in Return of the Jedi. What it looks like. It's kind of covered in metal. It's kind of cool looking. Mm. But so now enter Kara, Supergirl.
All right,
and she is a teenager, and it's Helen Slater, and she looks great. And she's like kind of whimsical, and she's kind of goofy, and she's very playful, and she's mischievous, and she's just kind of bouncing around. All this is established in like 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. Okay, like you kind of get
Little baby, like newborn baby. What are these things?
What is this? What's a tree?
Right?
You know,
what is this piece of on my body? Is this clothes?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, she's a baby calf.
But I think it's worth noting that more than anybody else in this movie, I think she's given it her all. She's really giving it an honest effort.
However
that comes across or we perceive it is
all of these Oscar winning actors that are in this film
are phony.
Were all nominated for Raspberry Awards.
Yeah, Peter O'Toole and Faye Dunaway nominated.
She was nominated. Helen Slater was nominated for a Saturn Award from this performance, and she is great. Yes, we should actually let me just back this all up.
Oh,
she is a great Supergirl. She is a fantastic, amazing Supergirl. Mm-hmm. It's just horrible that it's wrapped around this movie.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we find ourselves. And so we're on Kandor, but it's not called Kandor. It's called Argo City. We're Peter O'Toole, Zoltar, is holding this orb, and then Helen Slater, Kara, is jumping around like a baby calf. Okay, so then, for some reason, Zoltar, Peter O'Toole, gives Kara the orb to play with.
And then
all of a sudden the orb is like she's playing tennis ball with it or something, and then
and she drops it she and it drops rolls it, out the
it
window
rolls, and it rolls out the window that's obviously it's this whole city is covered in a millimeter thick plastic.
It's saran wrap.
It rolls out.
This city that exists in transdimensional space. I mean, maybe that's got something to do with the science of it, right? Being in transdimensional space. But it's not a shield. It's not even a glass window, right? It's just
it's a fucking chicken coop. You know? It's a greenhouse.
They live in like the bubble, like a giant packing material bubble.
Yes, that's what it is. It's what it is. And it pops out, and then it's this big vacuum, and then, you know, Kara's almost sucked into the void. She's end up being saved. But as it turns out, Zoltar. And the only reason why I'm remembering that is because that's the same. That's the genie in Big.
Right.
So Zoltar. Mm-hmm. Zoltar basically
I'll
admits.
I'll be honest with you. I'm okay if we just keep calling him Peter O'Toole.
Okay, Peter O'Toole. So yeah. Peter O'Toole, he admits that he was not supposed to have the orb. What's it called again? The orb?
The Omega Hedron.
The Omega. He was not supposed to have the Omega Hedron.
Oh,
and he was just. But that
Uncle Zoltar, what have you done?
Hey, just between you and me, I wasn't even really supposed to have that. So.
Yeah.
And sidebar, we've got 5 days to leave.
That's the thing. And so.
And I've been drinking Busch Lights all day. So tell you what, Kerry, you're going to have to take one for your Uncle Zoltar on this, all right? You tell him he was in charge of the Omega Hedron upon them all are.
That's exactly what happens.
I'm gonna pull into my Bill Cosby's letter.
So there he is. He's doing the little Cosby dance, and so as it turns out, so Kara's parents, Zor-El, and I forget the mom's name. It's like Adel. I don't remember. Anyway, the whole town.
Alora NZ.
Alora. Okay. All right. So they are freaking out. Right, because this the Max Hedron apparently powers the whole town for eternity. It had just
right. Unless it rolls right. over
it just
there.
Flew out the window.
Unless they give it to that asshole Peter O'Toole.
Yeah, it's so important that a kid is playing with it.
Apologies to the estate of Peter O'Toole.
Yeah, I mean, it just rolls out the goddamn voice. Window, and so it's gone. The town, you know, the whole planet town is freaking out. And Kara, she's obviously feeling very guilty because she caused all this mess. And so she takes it upon herself to jump into the pod that is very conveniently right in the center of the town. And it makes
right.
it
just
it,
sitting there right in the middle.
They actually make it a point to point out that there's some red, blue, yellow material. Mm-hmm. Like it's a blanket, mm-hmm. right? Because mm-hmm. this is the whole thing. So she jumps into this, not wearing those colors, but she jumps into this like craft and it closes. It looks like the orb. It closes around her and she takes off. And the parents are like, oh, Kara, where are you going?
Yeah,
going
wait
on?
A second. Wait
Come
a second.
Come back with my red,
Kara
yellow.
Kara feels so guilty
that she's
that
gonna...
she takes the lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. And bails.
Yeah. Yeah.
How
there's
is
no.
This...
There's
well,
absolutely
appropriate guilt.
There's absolutely no discussion of, hey, we need to do something. Hey, that's. You know,
I feel terrible, guys. This one's on me. Anyway, I gotta go.
We need to come up with a plan. She's just kind of like bites her thumb and jumps in the pod and.
I got to hook up with my boy Dookie down the street, so I'm going to take this pod. That's cool, right?
Yeah, deuces.
So, yes, it didn't really occur to me at the time. But, yeah, she did take the only life support, the only life pod out. Now, what we are led to believe is that she is following following the orb to its location, which happens to be Earth. All right? So she's on her way down to Earth.
Hey, Krypton was staged for a whole Earth invasion, weren't they?
Well, but this wasn't even Krypton. This was
a satellite. Satellite,
yeah.
But still.
Yeah, you know, yeah. And
sorry to paint all the Kryptonians with one brush, but...
Well, do you think that the Kryptonians have a conspiracy theory about them landing on Earth?
I do now. It just occurred to me, but I'm seeing the evidence everywhere.
Maybe so.
Everything they launch just right, happens just to happens, hit little right. old Earth.
I mean, that's... And they don't have that much tech. Anyway, Supergirl.
Well, I mean, we don't have to talk about Supergirl anymore if you don't want to. I mean, it's
yes,
this is horrible.
The impending invasion plans of Smallville are right. much more pertinent.
So she ends up crashing into a lake, and then the lake having a picnic outside of the lake that Kara falls into or crashes into in her pod. And I'm gonna highlight the fact she crashes in a pod into the lake. A pod that she got into, left the interdimensional space, crashed on Earth in a pod in the lake. All right. Having a picnic is Faye Dunaway's character, who I don't remember, but she's a witch, talking to we come to find out, is a high school, boarding school math teacher with a British accent. He could be a Monty Python. I don't know. He looks like one of those guys.
He could be a Monty
Peter
Python.
Cook.
He could be. I don't know.
His name, Nigel.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, Faye Dunaway is Selena the Witch. Yeah.
Okay, so it's Selena the Witch, and they're having a picnic talking about how she just wants to own... The conversation is literally how she just wants to dominate the world.
Yeah.
This is the character introduction for...
And she's like on a picnic date with a proper...
It's not even pass me that cheese and crackers. It's, you know, my good man, what I really would like to do someday is dominate. What is that?
That's what she's talking about.
Dominate the world.
And the orb...
Scene.
The orb that Kara was following...
Omega Hedron.
The Omega Hedron falls into their bean dip. And it's... They're eating their picnic on a white tiger skin on the grass.
Well, nothing says world domination more.
So, yeah. And, the bean
dip. Gotta have some deep pockets to take over the world.
The bean dip is on the white tiger's head, and the orb hits into the bean dip, and it splashes on top of the tiger's head. And I'm thinking to myself, who the fuck eats bean dip on a tiger head? You're gonna stain it.
You've obviously never had a picnic in the park.
I know. Well, so this is all weird.
I don't know what kind of life you're living.
White tiger skin twice, anyway.
Right. Yeah, you're right. I do think that this might have been a shot at Richard Donner because he is famously a environmentalist. He had a no fur campaign at the end of Superman II when Lois and Clark were at the Niagara Falls and. Mm-hmm. He also puts in things like anti-apartheid, like in Lethal Weapon movies. So he's known to be the champion of these like causes. And it would have put me past him that the Selkine, what's his name?
Selkine,
because they've had this feud. So I wouldn't put it past him that he put this tiger fur in there just to piss off Donner. You know, he used to put in like anti-apartheid messaging in his Lethal Weapon movies. You know, mm-hmm. he would have like. Don't eat tuna because it captures the dolphins in the nets. Like he would go on these like little like private missions. So anyway, I digress. The orb falls into the bean dip.
Thanks for throwing that little conspiracy theory.
Yeah, I was angry.
Our fringe listeners will appreciate that. I think so.
And so the bean dip gets onto the tiger, and this witch with dreams of world domination now have the power of an interdimensional city in the palm of her hands.
It's like she had a vision board at home where she just put magic ball falls from the sky into the bean dip.
I know,
and it happened. It's the power of positivity.
Yeah, maybe so. This is some Oprah Winfrey book, you know, like it's so ridiculous, right? The story is just nuts already. And I think I'm 5 minutes in. Maybe we're 10 minutes in, right?
Maybe at best.
So now Supergirl is now on Earth. And
she gets out of her pod and out of the lake.
She gets out of the lake, and then she's...
And she's wearing her costume already?
She's wearing Supergirl costume.
Just because there was some red, blue, and yellow...
Material. All of a sudden...
Not a dress. No, she just pops out wearing the costume, and I think you really need to... And it's dependent on you having seen Superman before. I mean, most people did, but... There's no explanation of her making that suit or why she's wearing an S. Like if you're just coming in this cold,
at least in the original Donner Superman. Now we do see the space blankets that he's put in with.
Right.
So we know that that's his material. That's his clothes.
And everybody on Krypton has the separate houses on their chest.
Correct.
Right.
So that's very well established, right. But. On the Superman Richard Donner film, there is a, you know, he gets to the Fortress of Solitude. He meets Brando. He meets his father, and then it does a time jump. And I think it's 12 years. I think they even established that in the movie. And then after that time jump, it's like a fade. Like it's like Superman. It's like Clark as a teenager. And then he morphs into Christopher Reeve in the suit. So that's 12 years of time that they advance to. And now he's wearing the suit. Anything could happen in those 12 years.
There's some probably very rudimentary kind of Velcro placeholder S's involved in there.
Yeah. It's like a make it at home kit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it took him
a while to get like, oh, this is how you sew.
But in the Supergirl movie.
He does have super crafting skills.
In the Supergirl movie. Kara goes into the lake and the orb hits the bean dip at the same time. There is no time jump, right? So unless she was stitching clothes on her flight over. You know, and so it's just
could
like
we don't know how
there's
long that
no
took.
Explanation for this.
It could be she could have been, you know, timey wimey.
Yeah, so she ends up, if I remember correctly, she ends up kind of flying around.
That's really does not pass the Bechdel test. If like the one thing in the female superhero pod, instead of super learning crystals, was like a needle and thread.
Right.
Hey,
right. We gave her a sewing machine.
There you go. You iron. Can sew.
You're going to need some skills when you get to Earth, Kara.
Here's
you're going to need to earn a living.
Here's a typewriter and a sewing kit.
That's horrible.
There you go. You can
That's
sew.
That's horrible, but so funny.
If we'd only known this sooner.
So anyway, she comes out fully costumed and I imagine coiffed.
Yep. Yep.
Flowing
out of the water, dry.
I do remember her having just awesome, super 80s blonde hair.
Yep. Yep. She looks great. Yep. I would absolutely
very
agree with
Marielle Hemingway esque. Mm-hmm.
And then
mind.
The best part of the movie happens at this point where she flies for the first time and she learns
how
to
that
fly.
Ballet you're
yeah,
talking
and
about.
Yeah. Apparently, it was,
which
again, it was
wasn't
cut.
Even
it wasn't even in the original release, which is ridiculous.
But luckily, sure when I watched it this out. Morning on whatever international release I watched, it was in there. And I got to say, like we mentioned earlier, that's some of the best wirework flying that you've seen on screen.
I think it's great. They hide the cables well. Yeah. Like you don't get it. It's not choppy at all. This is not a blue screen.
Right.
Somehow they pulled this off. I don't know. But
so I probably then did not have not even seen that because I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I doubt
30
you've seen
years.
This.
So it's the U.S. cut.
Yep.
So you're saying that the best part of the whole movie
we didn't see.
Didn't even see, let alone have a chance to forget.
Correct.
So whatever you think is the best part.
It's not the best part. The
you're
best part was
already wrong.
Yeah. And then so she ends up flying to she's flying through Chicago. In the original Donner Superman movies, it famously there's the Twin Towers. The New York is posing as Metropolis.
Hold on. I just as an audience member, I have to ask, did you skip over the part where she interacts with Faye Dunaway's character?
She
since they were right next to each other.
She doesn't interact
and all?
There. They don't,
she doesn't.
They don't interact there.
She goes from there. She goes and adopts her alter ego. She kind of walks by and sees some girls playing field hockey. And she's like, oh, yeah, you know what? That's what I want to do. So they go through this kind of transition where she goes from her Supergirl costume to this
alter ego
outfits of these private school girls that she just looked at and somehow
and her super stitching in about 10
super home ec skills,
and it's kind of a good 80s transition scene like from Supergirl to her, but it's again, kind of weird that she just is walking in as all of a sudden in the schoolgirl costume.
Yeah, it's
and
really weird.
And it manages to bullshit her way into enrolling and
I believe it's an all-girls school.
Yes.
And then the guy...
And who's her roommate?
Her roommate happens to be a Lucy Lane. Just by
Lucy Lane.
Now, what a happy coincidence
now,
for
in relation to the
purposes.
Smallville.
And I forgot to point out that when they're on the Kandor-like city of
Argo,
that there is a mention of a tree, and she has to be explained what a tree is, and then Peter O'Toole says it's on Earth. And then she goes, where my cousin is? So she is aware that Kal-El, Superman, is on Earth. And then so she is down and she pretends to be this boarding school student at this all-girls school. She's roommates with Lucy Lane. And she says that she's the cousin of Clark Kent. So she's also aware of the alter ego of Kal-El.
Which is weird, having just landed on this.
Correct. Yeah. And I don't know how they communicate with Altar Town or Argo.
Argo.
So, yes, this is, it's really, like, there's no, the writing, the script is so punched full of holes.
Yeah.
It's really horrible at this point.
But they've at least burned this much goodwill to set up the movie. So now that she's a private school
cousin of Clark Kent.
Who, well, we just accept that. Yeah. That's why we bought the ticket, because we knew it had something to do with Superman. Look, they proved it. Yeah. So now the story can finally start, right?
Yes.
So she's destroyed her home world by losing the super egg.
Yeah.
And then she's decided she's going to be Supergirl, and her alter ego is
Linda Lee.
Linda Lee.
Linda Lee. Yep.
That for some reason, it's Danvers in the comic book.
Interesting.
But for some reason, they changed it for this. I don't know, to make it a separate universe or to make it somehow make it more canon with the movies. I'm not sure why they would change her name.
Well, it's probably them damn maybe somebody named at Stan Lee.
Maybe somebody named Linda Lee just died at that school and she was assuming her identity.
Well, I have another theory of this. There's a extraordinary amount of close-ups at the back of people's jeans, and a lot of them are wearing Lee jeans.
Mm. Oh, that was big in the 80s. I like kidding. Where you're going with this.
Product placement. There was a lot of A&W logos I noticed in this movie.
If you flash forward to the very end of the credits, it says, like, special thanks to Lee jeans and, like, Honda synthesizers. And, like, you know, like, they're, like, it's really blatant in what Salskin, what's his name?
Salkind.
Salkind is doing. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just, this movie is just full of just nonsense, you know, shenanigans.
Yeah, but at least now the story can start, right?
Yes.
She can uncover some sort of nefarious goings on at the school and then turn into Supergirl
uncover at the school is the janitor.
Yeah.
The groundskeeper. She kind of catches an eye for this fancy young lad who is played by, I don't tell me if this name rings a bell with you, Hart Bochner.
Oh.
Hart Bochner.
A young Hart Bochner.
Is he a German rock band from the 80s?
He is not.
Bubby.
Guess number one is down.
A picture of this guy. Show him a picture of him. Now picture this guy
now
with
the
beard.
Do you recognize him?
Yes, listeners, here's a picture.
Up to this point,
listeners
at home, he's been in Breaking Away, Terror Train, Rich and Famous.
Why are you
Super
going
Girl,
through all of that?
Leading up to his most famous role where somebody's going to recognize him, hopefully. Ooh. Ellis from Die Hard.
Bubby.
Okay, so she's got a total sleazeball janitor who's hitting
totally
on her.
Totally worth sitting through
soon
this
as she
movie
gets to
just
school
to see that.
Well, and I want to back it up just a couple of minutes, like quite literally a couple of minutes before all this happens. When she's flying around and she's in Chicago, she's in the middle of this town in this horrible neighborhood, and a semi truck stops. And in the middle of a bad neighborhood in Chicago, two white dudes pop out. And it's basically an attempted rape. And, of course, she kicks her asses.
Right. The two truckers try to assault her and lift up her skirt. One of them played by Max Headroom's very own Matt Fuhrer.
Oh, that's right. Boy. That is him.
He was still struggling.
Yeah. The other one by Vincent D'Onofrio?
Any work?
No. That's not him?
No.
Okay. It looks like him. All right. So at
some point, Matt Fuhrer grabs the Max Headroom.
And then turns into Max Headroom. Boom!
Did I just predict the end? Did I get it? I hope I did, because honestly, I'm sorry, gentlemen, but maybe we'll pick up this synopsis that we've made it 10 minutes into later.
Well, let me fast forward.
First, okay. I'm afraid I am dying to hear it, and I know the listeners are too. Marky, let's talk to Helen Slater. When did you guys talk?
Oh, yeah. We talked to her at Comic-Con in 2018. She was there to promote maybe the Blu-ray release or the 35th anniversary of... Was Supergirl's anniversary last year? It might have been.
Could be.
Yeah. I don't remember exactly why she was there, but
She'll be thrilled to hear that.
It was great to sit with her and to talk with her. I do get a couple of questions in, but I was a part of a really great table. It was about four or five of us maybe at the most. We had a great time, and I learned a lot about her process and how she ended up with this role.
All right, well, magic interview machine. Prove Marky right.
Meanwhile.
Hello.
So, you were 21 years old. You just got cast as Supergirl.
I don't think so.
Was it not 20?
I was 18.
18? Oh. How did you feel about taking this title character and taking on this whole movie?
I mean, it was so exciting. I was 19 by the time we were done shooting. But it was just so exciting to make this film, to be cast, to get a part at a performing arts high school where, you know, getting acting work was all of our dream. It was the Fame High School, so I had been, we weren't allowed to work really while we were there, so this was the big experiment, get a job, and it was really exciting. I mean, all I had was just looking forward, excitement.
Did you know anything about Supergirl before you got
nothing.
Here? Nothing.
Zip. I don't even know how popular was that comic then. I mean, I don't know that it was. It was still really big in the...
More now.
It's just not in the Manhattan.
What do you think of that original kind of screen test off costume they gave you with the headband and
right.
the perm? Like,
I know. Really wonky. But they were just saying at the other table that she was that way in the 80s.
Well,
they
did that because the movie studio told them, hey, make her that way in the comics, so they did.
Yeah.
And then the movie said, oh, never mind, we're doing this.
Yeah,
but then they
crazy.
Stayed that way.
What? Oh, look, you have it. Fantastic. So that was done before the movie.
Yes.
It was done before the movie, but the movie asked them to do that.
Oh,
to,
and then
to
they
tie
didn't
in.
Stick
and then
with
they,
it.
Like, oh, yeah, no, we're not doing that anymore. But
crazy.
You have fun.
That's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Good ink. Nice ink.
And you've raised two different versions of Supergirl because on, you know, the live-action show, you know, you're doing that. But then also in DC Superhero Girls,
yes.
you're Martha Kent and you're raising
How
that
Supergirl.
How many
more mothers can I play?
I know. You're your own mother. How many people can say that across multiple continuities,
That's
too?
True. Am I my own mother? I am. I am. And I'm Clark's mother on Smallville.
Yeah,
Clark
that.
Kent's
mother. Yes, because you're Laura. Yeah. You're your own mother and your own aunt.
I'm like the mother. I'm going to get some kind of special, like, placement in the universe.
Yeah.
So, the costume that's super, for the original Supergirl.
Yeah.
What was that like? I guess, was it a lot of fittings, or did they get it right?
I remember they tried out a lot of different things. There were a lot of chefs in the kitchen, because it wasn't just, it was the Salkins, I'm sure DC was part of it, the costume designer, But somebody at one of these Comic-Cons bought one of the original Supergirl lead, and it looks so tiny. I was like, did it shrink? I mean, my weight hasn't changed that much, but I was like, I don't think I could actually, it looks so, the only thing I can think of is that just the dry heat or something, that actually that material, it must have gotten, just must have shrunk it.
What about flying? How was that like?
I mean, I, as a little girl, and even to this day, whenever I have a flying dream, I feel like I won the lottery, because it's so vivid and such a beautiful experience. Have you ever had a flying dream?
All the time. There's
just nothing like it, right? So then to be actually doing it in a movie, I don't know, I had this just particular joy around it. I'm going to be doing that thing that I love so much when I have a client.
So, over the last few years, Supergirl has become much bigger than it had been in many, many years. And so how does it feel to be known as the first?
Yeah, people have been asking that. You know, it's sort of like it didn't occur to me. That's the only way to describe it. It just wasn't on the radar of, like, oh, I'm the first of this. You know, I can put a feather in my cap. I did this. But what I do think is that it's curious that between 1984 and 2016, or whenever the Supergirl series came out, that there was nothing. I mean, even with all the flaws of the original screenplay, you would have thought somebody would have been like, come on, let's just take another whack at this. And they really, until Greg Berlanti was just like, let's do this. So I find that just interesting.
Was there even another woman lead superhero movie between Wonder Woman and Supergirl?
Well, not in the
Catwoman.
Lead. We had Catwoman.
We don't talk about Catwoman.
And Elektra.
Okay, I guess.
We don't talk about that one either.
We don't talk about them because they were not great.
Well, yeah. but that's different still. Why is it different? It's not DC, right?
It is.
Oh, it is DC?
Well, one Catwoman is Marvel.
One is Marvel.
But still, they're they weren't really heroes. I mean,
it's not the same as a young woman, like think of Melissa right now, or just where they're figuring out who they are and keep making these choices, moral choices or ethical choices of like putting other people before themselves. That's unusual. Like you can't define that just as a character, even in the...
Did you give any advice to Melissa?
Somebody else was asking that. I mean, I love this girl. I think she's incredible in the part. She's so deeply talented. Very early on, we talked a little bit about some of the stuff about just being in this part. But, you know, my big thing is they one-hour TV shows work those actors way too hard for too many hours. I think there should be legislation or new laws put in because she will solidly work 15, 16-hour days. And there's just no reason when you're doing a 22-episode. And anyway, that's beside the point. My feeling is that thing of self-preservation, self-care, so that you do have something in the tank, that I would say for any young person in their 20s and 30s, just that mentality, especially in the West, especially in the United States, that vertical thinking, like you keep going, keep achieving, keep producing, keep going, and there's a, you know, I personally think there's a flaw in that mindset. And actors, we definitely have, you have to be, you know, you have to have a lot of inner strength to go like, I'm going to take a pass, or I don't think, anyway.
Do you see a part of you in the Supergirls in comics now or in the TV show?
Like, you know, I did have like a weird psychedelic experience. I had it when I saw Laura Vander Hoot. Is that how we say her?
Yes.
When I first saw her on the set of Smallville, like I remember looking at the back of her and thinking like, okay, that's what I looked like. I couldn't see her face, but I was like, oh, that's kind of what it was like 25 years ago back then or whenever it was. And similarly, seeing the S on Melissa, that kind of, I had a little bit of this wonky, there's no way to describe it. Just, I wish I had the words. It just felt really odd. It was such a melding, all-encompassing experience. No one else had played Supergirl yet. Here I am in my 50s, seeing somebody in the thing that I was in. Just kind of surreal, I guess is the right...
And you've done, what's that in the past? You've done Talia al Ghul for Batman.
That's true.
And now you're doing Martha Kent. But
right.
I wanted to give you like a proposition.
Yeah.
So, you know, the late Adam West, he did Return of the Caped Crusader. He did Batman versus Two-Face.
Yeah.
What if they ever positioned you to do Supergirl 84 animated? Would you ever?
Oh, that's funny. Who was saying someone else had not quite that question? Yeah, I mean, I would, sure. I don't know that our voices changed that much, so it would kind of be okay. However, like Idina Menzel, who's the most incredible singer on the planet, she did Frozen.
Yeah.
But I felt, because she's more my contemporary than not, like, this is a 40-something-year-old doing a young 15... Like, I just felt, as an older person, I think if I was younger watching it, I know that nobody cared. So I would be sensitive about that, about being a Supergirl voice in my 60s. Just to keep going. That's very funny.
So... You've also contributed to the comics. You wrote a story Supergirl number 50 back in 2010, I think it was.
Yeah.
How does it feel that you were able to contribute to that legacy?
Fun. Just so fun. Say yes. Fun. There it was. Why not?
Do you have any memories of working with Peter O'Toole on the Krypton sequences?
I mean, I remember when I saw the scene in the Phantom Zone finally shot, and I thought like, oh, the wind is blowing, it's this natural acting, and he was Shakespearean. He kind of had his hand up, yeah, this whole, and I was kind of like this lame, yeah, that kind of, so I had a little bit like, oh, but I've told this story before that I had these speeches from Shakespeare memorized because of Performing Arts High School, and one was this Juliet speech that now is the Mask of Night is... Now is the Mask of Night is... Against my skin. Anyway, well, it's not coming to me now. But he said to me, and I was doing it very emotionally to Romeo, you know, and he said, I want you to try it again and pretend you're holding two daffodils in your hands. And what that did is it grounded me and allowed this poetry to come through. So that's a very profound memory of him.
Very zen.
Yeah, more no, but more from an acting point of view, so that the Shakespeare could come through, and you weren't distracting with your hand movements or your. And the other thing, which I just told the other table, was him saying to me this thing about, I want you to think about the word aware. And I thought, like, that's so wild he's saying that. But here it is 35 years later, and that's a really good prompt to say to an 18-year-old. Because think about it. Like, what are you aware of right now? Where is your attention? Kind of had that Zen Buddhist something.
That did you have any moments with, like, fade down away?
Not personally. It was very, she was extremely professional, you know, sort of ran a very tight, sort of tight ship. And I'm sure it's very tricky for her to have stepped into just this wild, like, Hieronymus Bosch painting. Like, what are you in after the kinds of roles she had done before? So I think she probably was a little more buttoned up and just...
And Brenda Vaccaro?
Fantastic. So warm-hearted, very, you know, as you can imagine, just lots of dripping with warmth and humor. And terrific.
And why didn't you look for the Omega Hadron instead? You went to school instead.
Crazy. Like your Where are the script writers?
Yeah, okay. I'm glad that you agree with us on that. You know, we like watched the movie again last night at the hotel, and like I'm like, her parents are dying any day, and you and Lucy Lane are like
what
having
is
French
that?
Fries.
For goodness sakes. Agree.
I just that'll make everyone happy.
It's not necessarily the same situation, but you did an episode of Supergirl last season, Midvale, and these young actresses were stepping into parts that they had never
right?
really done. And now you're kind of on the other hand. You know, you have these young actresses. Did you give any advice to them?
They were so strong, both those girls, and delightful, like solidly delightful. And I thought they looked amazingly like the older, like Kyler and Melissa. I don't know that I'd give advice, really. I mean, I've played now moms a lot, not only in these Supergirl, but The Lion Game and Gigantic and these other TV series. And the most fun for me is when they have auditions for something else. And traditionally, everybody at some point is auditioning for something else. And then because I love coaching actors. I love actors so much. So to me, that's like the boon, working on a scene for their audition or their.
Yeah.
It gives me great joy.
What's it like to be here and to see how Supergirl's grown and just the fandom of this place?
I'm sure this is wrong to say this, but I am surprised that it still has a life this many years later. I mean, it really... I've done a lot of other films that have sort of been whatever, or television shows, but I guess in this era of these superheroes, I think the timing has a lot to do with it, and that Melissa's show is doing well, but I can't imagine it's going to keep going. I think at some point it will have its rest. My version, not the whole thing, but yeah. I have like an interesting thing about will they change the... not always keep doing these traditional beautiful women whose bodies are traditional. Like, I would really love to see someone take on in the superhero pantheon, like, the women that don't look like the man's ideal version of a woman. And we haven't seen that yet. It's still, even though a lot has changed, there's a lot more humor, there really is now, in the same way, I think, with gay movement coming out, like the LGBTQ, with just women's body types. There are women that are coming out as bigger, that are coming out as a new, with that not having to feel just the culture knocking them over the head of how you're physically supposed to look. And why not in a superhero or somewhere? It'd be really cool, because there's a lot of... I think it would go a long way for a lot of the women, young girls that are growing up who are still feeling isolated, still feeling they don't quite fit in.
There's a comic book, actually, about a superhero.
What's it called? Because I saw it.
Faith.
Is she the... Yes. She's
curvy.
Big?
Yeah.
No, this is something else. It's a graphic novel. She lives on an island, and she has to go get food, and she's a big woman, and it's a graphic novel.
It's true.
Oh, man. I'm going to find out what it's about.
Yeah,
and that's really... No, not that, but that's cool.
Yeah,
all right, then I stand corrected.
Faith is great.
Does she have a power, or she's just
she has superpower.
Oh well, then I am completely stand corrected.
Yeah. Well, but it's that's not a big.
I don't know.
But you're wanting it to be, you know, wider, like you know,
wider, more.
More in more mass media and stuff, like you know, because in every of these new superhero movies, it is the perfect body types,
right?
Like the ones that everyone's seen. Yeah, it's you know, and
it just great. Would be interesting. It would be interesting.
I would like a Superman that looks like this too.
Right. You know? Maybe there's a series in that, that's like right. Just a fun sort of.
Have you been asked to come back for Supergirl this coming season yet?
Not yet, but I'm pretty sure they so far the tradition is like two or three episodes they bring me up and
yeah. You got to knock Dean Cain over for all that nasty stuff he did
right?
The other year.
My goodness. Yeah.
You know what it is about superheroes, though? They really replace what used to be the Greek gods.
Exactly. Oh, I'm sorry. Agreed. And I wrote a whole record about the Greek myths. Yeah. I'm a big Greek mythology person. Yes. Yeah. Interestingly.
Although we brought in other things like with Superman.
But it has that. I think people, like, probably in 1,000 years would look back in the same way we look back at Greece, at Homer and the Odyssey, the Iliad, and look at these. Yeah, that'd be interesting. This is kind of making that pantheon of these.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Did you get to meet Chris while filming Superman?
I did. He was so lovely and so sweet. I'm very sorry he's gone. Yeah.
We're going to wrap it up.
Thank you guys so much. You were lovely to talk to. Have a great day.
Thank you. We're terrific.
Sure.
From the producers of Superman, Alexander Solkind presents Supergirl.
Like Superman.
He's my cousin.
Whoa.
Supergirl on a secret mission to save her world.
You got your fun, Selina. The game is finished.
Starring Faye Dunaway, Peter O'Toole, and Helen Slater as Supergirl. Rated PG. Starts Wednesday, November 21st at a theater near you.
Whoa.
Supergirl.
It's hard to not hum the music of John Williams that is not in this movie.
That's
it's worth pointing out.
Right. That is,
yeah, they went yes. with something totally different on the trailer.
That's true. Yeah. That's an interesting choice. But I mean, it was still his score in the opening title.
No, I don't think so. I think it's very synthesized. I think it's different. Yeah,
you're correct.
I mean, yeah, I think they
couldn't afford him for that. I would assume so. I assume.
Yeah. I'm sure they obviously have the rights to the Superman theme, as they're going to apply it.
High school bands can play John Williams music. They couldn't.
It's not John Williams playing all the music. It's the rights. He has to compose it. Yeah. But yeah, so that was the 30-second trailer to Supergirl. And notice it said November 21st. So was this a Thanksgiving release?
So, yeah.
It was.
Would have been a Wednesday, right?
Would any of us gone to see
the fact checkers?
I don't know. But I just think it's funny that this movie in 1984 was a Thanksgiving release. You know, isn't it more like this is this?
Are you trying to draw out a turkey joke here?
No, I just think that this should have been a summer release.
Mm. Well, even
this should have been a big, you know, this is a big superhero film.
Maybe they realized that they had a potential stinker on their hand and wanted to get the extra couple of days of the Thanksgiving weekend. You know how it comes out on the Wednesday, you get those couple days of.
You think so?
Of box office. Oh, well.
If we did our research, we would have known what the box office was. But
I prefer to ponder than research myself. Yeah. And also, welcome back, everybody. And that was Helen Slater.
Yep.
From pretty recently, just last Comic-Con.
Yeah,
correct.
Exactly.
So yeah, that's a pretty accurate picture. Charming, charming young woman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was. She has a very calming presence, right?
Yes.
Like, it's really hard to, like, get all worked up.
Very subdued.
It's very, very subdued, yeah. But she made all of us very, very welcomed, and I got a couple of the questions in.
Yeah.
I'm sure we'll kind of talk about that, but go ahead.
I was going to say, she masked her excitement very well.
Yeah, exactly.
she was playing it very cool, meeting Marquee.
Yeah. I was just as excited, Helen, believe me. This was just one of those moments where you know, you get, this is why we do the podcast. It's that you kind of every once in a while get the opportunity to kind of be in front of somebody that was just a really big deal to you at one point.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And this movie was, and again, just to kind of rehash what we talked about earlier, I remember this movie being like, I remember liking this movie once and watching it many times.
Yes.
Like I watched
it. And that's, and as I said, I'm still in that boat. I haven't rewatched it just recently, like two of you. So you are convincing me not to rewatch it.
Yeah. I'm going to save
you. We'll
see
if I can even survive the rest of this synopsis.
That's right. Where do we leave off? I'm in the.
Let's see. I think you just described sexual assault by Matt Frewer.
Okay. You're right.
In Chicago.
That's when the
this
plot
is good
really
introduction. Lots of minutia, but when does the plot take off?
Well, yeah, it's funny because I think that we're only in the first like 8 minutes, 10 minutes. So yeah, I got to really speed this up. Yeah, so she ends up. We already talked about her
smash
going to school.
Smash cut to the Phantom Zone.
She goes to the school. She ends up meeting Lucy Lane. She falls in love with Ellis from Die Hard. Faye Dunaway's going crazy because she's this wicked witch.
She's got a bean dip space rock that's making her super powerful.
Yeah, it's got nothing to do with the bean dip, but the Max Hedron, right, is it's in her possession. And even though she was a practicing witch with world domination, she never really had the power to do it. Well, now she has it, thanks to Supergirl's,
of all the bean dips in all the world.
It fell right into her bean dip. So, yeah. So now Supergirl, who has just a few days to save her family, she enrolls in school. She's friends with Lucy Lane. She ends up meeting a strapping bow tie Jimmy Olsen.
Oh, yes.
He's also in it. It's the only actor that's in all of these movies. And she kind of gets distracted by Ellis, who's shirtless in one of the scenes, is ripped as fuck. I mean, it's just like this guy's just all ripped. Mm. I mean, he's a good looking guy.
I think we were all ripped back in the 80s.
Yeah, woo! I was. I know.
The filmmakers sure were. Hey, can I get some for that?
Well, no, it's just not today. It's just one of these things where like it doesn't really. Plot just doesn't really mean anything here. Like, it's just, all the pieces are on the table. You know, you have to get the orb, get it back to the family.
Right.
Yeah. You're describing what the plot would be. Yes.
Yeah.
It seems that's where it would plug in.
Yeah. And then it's just kind of just shenanigans right now. So you have to have her save a couple of people from here until the end of the movie. She does establish this, like, little kind of rivalry with the Faye Dunaway character. Mm-hmm.
She's also in love with Ellis.
And she's in love with Ellis.
Right. Yeah. So she puts the love spell on Ellis. And,
You're right. So Faye Dunaway is also in love with Ellis. And so she...
This is where the conflict between our two characters is created.
It's not the fact that Faye Dunaway has the orb. Yes. It's the fact that they both like Ellis.
Right. Women's being women's.
Oh,
yeah.
This is worse and worse.
It gets worse. And so, they're basically fighting over this dude. And
So they go with these crazy fights, right? That end up sending her to the Phantom Zone?
Well, yeah. So there's, she has the power now of the Infinity Stone or whatever the hell it is. And so,
Omega Hedron.
And so she ends up, after fighting Faye Dunaway for the love of Ellis from Die Hard, they're through this crazy charm. She gets sent to the Phantom Zone.
I mean, we really should touch briefly on that, the crazy scene where she possesses the backhoe or whatever that is.
Oh, yeah.
And chases Ellis down the street and scoops him up. And then the big tire comes rolling off of the gas station and kind of purposefully chases people down the street. It's really, it's madness.
That's kind of ringing a bell.
Yeah.
And it's all kind of Faye Dunaway standing on the side, waving her arms and all these weird things. Probably due to the budget, you can't really do too much except for roll a giant tire down the street and maybe.
Yeah.
Fly my tire.
And hide a guy behind the steering wheel of a backhoe.
Whatever that thing was. This was clearly filmed in like Tucumcari, New Mexico or something. Like, it's like this small little town.
Well, it's worth noting that's where that happens, where that big fight scene happens in the daytime, is the same scene where Max Headroom and that other guy tried to accost Supergirl when she first gets there.
It's the same.
It's only lit different, shot from a different angle.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Shot for night.
You turn CD Chicago
into Tucumcari, New Mexico.
Indeed.
That's basically what it
Hollywood.
Is.
That's the magic of Hollywood right there. I'm not saying this movie didn't do something right.
Yeah, I think so. So it's just really things just I'm sorry about that. Things just kind of get crazy here, right? Supergirl is obviously the foil to Faye Dunaway. It's very well established at this point. You've seen Supergirl act super. She's stopping this like runaway tractor that's possessed by Faye Dunaway. It gobbles up Ellis. She like tears the jaws of the tractor open, takes Ellis out. And at the time, Faye Dunaway put a trance on Ellis that the first person that she sees, he will fall in love with. And of course, it's Supergirl because she just saved him.
Oh,
okay.
Boy.
So it's just really weird. It's a stupid script. It's horrible, as Helen herself said in the interview that you guys just heard. It's full of just nonsense.
At some other point, does someone write an anonymous love letter that then bounces between all the main cast members and everybody thinks everybody else wrote it?
No, it's not. It's not an episode of Three's Company.
Do they have to win a ski competition to save the mountain?
No, it should have been.
Surely they were able to put a couple more.
Solid pull.
It's pretty bad. And yes, what ends up happening is that Faye Dunaway ends up, again, with the power of the orb, ends up sending Kara through a mirror, which ends up putting her into the Phantom Zone. And here she runs into Peter O'Toole again. So this is Peter O'Toole's...
Zoltar.
And this is his second scene and only in his final scene. And they end up kind of dealing with the Phantom Zone, which is, you know, it is kind of cool, right?
It's also...
Because when you are a kid... You see, you know, Zod sent into the Phantom Zone, and then the next thing, but you never see the Phantom Zone itself. So this is kind of cool, right?
Yeah, you're right. That's a good point. This is the first time that we see inside the Phantom Zone as opposed to that mirror thing.
Yeah.
Right? And I always kind of assumed that that was the Phantom Zone, that you were just trapped in that mirror, beaten on, like, let me out. In this movie, they kind of make it seem like that's the transport to get you to the Phantom Zone.
Yeah.
And then they show it's just kind of like Dirty Moon. It's kind
of yeah.
Dirty Windy Moon. And it's a big rock.
There's like a lot of cyclones.
Right. Glittery.
Glittery.
Nobody's building in the Phantom Zone.
But I was going to mention that Sir Peter O'Toole performance on in said Phantom Zone is really worth checking out, even if just for that moment. He's given everything in the face of all of these PAs throwing dirt into the wind machines right in his face, and he's just really announcing over everything, over all the wind and everything, "This way, Kara," and just really leaning into the role. It's worth seeing it for that.
Originally, the Phantom Zone was a forest. And then Peter O'Toole chewed all the scenery.
Thank you. Yes. That's a good one. I think, and he, and again.
So this we're probably seeing one of the later takes then, because everything's
well, exactly. At this point. Yeah. And he's still wearing the
and
Bill
I
Cosby.
I will act until this is a dead moon.
He's really like laying it on, man. And he's got a wicked, awesome head of hair. He's fit. He's looking good. And he dies a CGI horrible death. It's really bad, right? He does this, like, he falls into one of the cyclones, and it's just like...
What? Right.
It's just, it's horrible. Now...
And it was just lay there, Peter. We'll take care of the rest.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, I'm not...
Ride a little bit, and we'll pull the camera back. Green screen, baby.
My apologies for not spoiler alerting, but this movie is hardly worth anybody's time, okay? I could tell you the good
scenes. First of all, that's the name of my new podcast, spoiler alert, or I'm going to ruin the endings of 35-year-old movies.
So Peter O'Toole dies, and it's presented like he sacrificed himself for Kara to get out of the Phantom Zone, although it's not really well established what it would take to get her out of the Phantom Zone, other than climbing this thing and not getting sucked into the thing. So I'm assuming that by him getting sucked into it, it allows her to escape it, and thus he sacrificed himself to get her out. And which is fitting because he's the reason why everybody's in this predicament anyway. Because he was the one that, you know, very irresponsibly mishandled the orb to begin with, right? Mm-hmm. So he's kind of making amends. He is, it should be pointed out, it is touched upon in the first scene that the reason why he's in the Phantom Zone is because he exiled himself there.
You right. know, right. Over his guilt of...
Right, of losing the thing.
Of dropping the Omega Hedron in the sewer.
Yeah, like letting a kid play with it like it's a tennis ball.
Yeah.
Things are looking okay.
So he exiles himself, and as a way to make amends for it, he's like, I'll get you out. I'm just going to kill myself.
Yeah. And so he jumps into the vortex.
I'm done with this script.
He jumps into the vortex, and she's out of the vortex. And then all of a sudden, she crashes out of the mirror. And it should be pointed out that Faye Dunaway, in the meantime, basically turns into like a Mussolini character. She ends up taking over the small town.
Correct.
Of Tucumcari, right. New Mexico. And she has like bicycle helmeted guards in the front of her limousine, in the back of the limousine. Ellis is all mind warped in the, you know, next to her.
So she was able to rework the love potion.
Yeah, everybody's right. just okay. totally she's totally Mussolini at this point.
Right. Without and Supergirl in her way, she's kind of
she's now unstoppable correct. To at least Tucumcari domination.
Well, you gotta start somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. She's starting.
You gotta buy Baltic before Park Avenue.
And then she
first
actually
Mississippi tomorrow.
Oh,
the world.
I didn't even think that I even brought this up, but
hard to believe
she teleports the mountain from Close Encounters.
That's right. The mountain, yeah,
it's
right.
The
wait, what,
you know, the big mountain from Close Encounters of the Third Kind. It's like a big mountain that's in Montana.
That flat top, something.
Yeah, that one.
Big Willie's Slick Mountain. Yeah.
So basically, she puts that inside of Tucumcari, New Mexico, so that all of the local towns are like, "Oh, what the hell is this?" And her tower
is
up on
top. God.
Yes, right. The tower's on top of this thing. So that's where she's living,
and it doesn't. Fade in. It just
shows up.
Snap. And, yeah, and it's that like a really bad 70s Saturday morning effect. Right.
The reason why this summary is so all over the place is because the script is just all over the place. So let's just get to the end. Let's end this now.
I'm on board now.
Okay. All right. So Supergirl gets out of the mirror, which is on top of in a castle that's on top of the Close Encounters Mountain that is now in Tucumcari, New Mexico. Okay? She breaks out of this and then
swallowed the fly. That
yeah, I don't know why she has to die. So I'm trying my hardest to kind of bring this to you. I think I'm struggling. Jimmy, can you please go over the end of the movie?
Okay. Well. It comes at when they're fighting, it's again some really bad special effects, some really bad green screen where she's just kind of laying in front of her, standing in front of a green screen and wiggling around, and then they're back projecting some stop motion puppets and this kind of thing, and it's again it's a whole lot of face acting with Faye Dunaway wriggling her hands around, and then Helen Slater
a lot of air
going,
machine
right, and Helen Slater just kind of going with these fake monsters behind her, but she eventually.
There's like this like demon monster that she like summons, like this like darkness demon, right?
Is it like a Cthulhu thing? Is that what she's been trying to summon the whole time? Has that been her secret weapon for world domination?
I don't think so. I think this was just like, oh, yeah.
So this is just like,
you can handle
I need a demon
just
real quick.
Another thing that she's going to throw at it. And then,
okay.
And then similar style to our first Superman movie, she kind of flies around in circles around the monster until it blows up.
It does blow up.
And it pulls in the witch. And
she just modified the old Escape from the Phantom Zone cyclone shoot-em-out.
Ooh. Uses that tornado, shoots everybody back into the Phantom Zone.
Kryptonian physics.
You just made that make more sense than what it ever could
than
have.
What the script bothered to give you.
But hold on. It gets better. No, we're not done. So now that the witch, I'm trying to remember her name. Is it Bianca, maybe? Now that she's gone, Ellis is out of his spell.
Uh-huh.
They reunite now that Supergirl's got the Omega Hedron back in her hands. And this is, after all the weirdnesses that happen, this is where it really gets weird for me. Is she just flies off with the Omega Hedron into the river, into the lake that she landed in. And now all of a sudden, the whole Argo City is there.
Yeah.
And unexplicably, the whole Argo City is there. She just flies in her Supergirl costume. And
well, home is where the Omega Hedron is.
Holding the Omega Hedron in, and it is treated like, welcomed like a hero. And credits.
That actually makes...
No explanation of why they were there. What's going on with this reunion?
It makes a lot of sense, because I think it was Anton Chekhov who said, if you've got a child holding an Omega Hedron in the first act, she's going to fly back to her city under a lake at the end. Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense at all. She left Argo in a spacecraft that crashed in the lake.
Ran off, yeah.
And then she gets the Max Hedron
and then
goes into the lake, and now the Argo's in the lake?
Yes.
That's what happens here.
I mean, maybe even just one line of dialogue saying, hey, we'll meet you there.
Would
have been helpful, but there's no.
And maybe I'm still don't have a total grasp on it.
I just watched it.
As I should. Yeah. But I thought that once this Omega Max Hedron was lost in the sewer, Argo was screwed. They were fucked. That's why
they had a few days
out of quote unquote guilt.
Right.
She takes the only escape pod.
Right. Yeah. Right.
She leaves everybody behind.
So what? She's like, Argo
I got this. Hold my Cosmo. I got this.
That's hilarious.
Was all of Argo in the Phantom Zone? And that's when Peter O'Toole was like, well, I'll banish myself further. I'll wander off near this magic glowing cyclone.
That's an interesting theory. But I kind of took it to be like, although they didn't say it, it was kind of a we'll meet you there. And then, you know, who knows how long it takes. Maybe they took the, you know, Kara had a shortcut because she's more lean in the escape pod. And they had to fly at a different speed or something.
None of this stuff is established. Like, we're basically
forced. This is spitballing. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. We're kind of forced to, like, piece together a coherent storyline here. Mm-hmm. This movie,
fond memory, so I wouldn't mind retconning this a little here.
Yeah,
I guarantee we could save this movie. I'm not. there's some good foundation there.
I think you would not
change expectation. We can bring this in.
Lower your expectation.
This is the kind of movie that if you want to watch it, you should watch it with a bunch of people. This is your
and maybe you're having a drinking game with these people.
You know, because there are some like cool things in this movie. You know, this is definitely Supergirl.
Yeah, Supergirl's in it. She's still cool.
It's got all the tropes. She's got the blue and the red cape. She's got the S on her chest.
Interesting to note. Did we mention earlier that is the same cape from?
I think
that
we but it's worth pointing out again. Okay. This is the same cape.
I came here to make one observation.
This would be the perfect movie for like a Mystery Science 3000. Right. Yep. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, where you just kind of get a bunch of friends together, a bunch of smart asses, and let's just all watch this movie and just kind of goof, you know, because there are some good parts. There are parts that are enjoyable to watch. There are parts that are funny to watch. There are parts that are also impressive, you know, too. It's got all that in it. It's a horrible movie. It's a horrible, stupid movie. Mm-hmm. But it is fun to watch. It's a fun watch.
That redeems a lot, and which is easily explained why me as a child would love it.
I think so.
And me as an adult probably shouldn't watch it unless I'm really, really ready to laugh at it.
Yeah.
Like with most things, I think, especially superhero-wise, I enjoyed a lot more, at least in a different way as a child, and then come to appreciate it through a different light as an adult. But that's what makes me love this the superhero genre, I guess. You know, it hooked me as a kid, and now...
Yep. You might almost say the themes of which grew up with us.
Ooh, I believe you're right about that.
Here on Saturday Morning Cereal.
Oh my goodness. I think
but all right, now let's tease that out though. So if it's growing up, the next female superhero movie.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman, could we sit around with a bunch of people make Mystery Science Theater snide jokes about it? Would that be okay?
I think it's too good for that.
Well,
I think you could do it with any movie.
Sure, I'm sure, that's right. fair.
I'm not saying it would be as entertaining.
I liked it. I think it'll stay at the top of the box office for at least one more week, possibly.
No. He was talking about Wonder Woman.
Oh, yeah. The movie Wonder Woman?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah.
That one? Yeah. Is it okay to make fun of it?
Sure. I mean, there's some funny parts. Oh, well, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of funny parts in that one, I would say. I mean, not intentional, like this, not intentionally funny parts, but yeah.
Yeah.
Good moments to crap on it, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But isn't it funny, though, that you have Supergirl in 1984, and then you really don't get a superheroine movie until Wonder Woman,
and at least not a big blockbuster.
Yeah,
right?
Yes, I know there's Elektra and Catwoman, mm-hmm, and yes. I'm sure there's some other ones, but you know,
anti-heroes.
Like, yeah, but
somewhat
they're borderline superhero at best, but they're still not like on the pantheon. They're not Superman, right?
Yeah, they're not Superman. They're not Batman. Yeah. They're not apparently Iron Man, who before, you know, the Marvel movies. Iron Man came out, I never thought was so central.
Yeah.
Or such an iconic character.
Yeah, but they like never really tried to make a superheroine movie before.
Right.
I mean, they were like, it was like where being a girl was a part of the charm. Where it was like that was a part of the challenge and a part of the arc.
Well, right. Also, yeah, but I mean, also remember that superhero movies have only kind of recently come into vogue, whereas everything's a superhero movie. Nobody might not have. I mean, that was a pretty big chance to take in 1984 to do a female superhero lead.
You're right? Absolutely right about that.
And we're really looking at probably. I mean, I would say X-Men, the original Bryan Singer X-Men, is when you really start to see people, you know, the companies looking at superhero properties as a money making, right? And then you come along with the X-Men franchise and Wolverine. Hugh Jackman hits really big.
Spider-Man
is doing pretty good. And then once we get around,
but at no point even then did we get Storm motion picture
Correct.
And no one was, as I recall, really clamoring for it then either.
There might have been some rumors of a Halle Berry, you know, once.
Well,
once
she did Catwoman.
Yeah. Maybe that's why they got poo-pooed real quick. But again, you know, and then the Dark Knight starts to do really well, his series. And then once we get to Iron Man, now almost everything is a superhero movie or everything is a superhero comic book property. Yeah. And this is a good way for studios to make money, right? So
to the point where it doesn't even have to be a well-known superhero.
Correct.
Because
at first,
you know, if a studio was going to bankroll it, like I said, it had to be Batman. I think Iron Man would have been considered too small potatoes for the budget it got until the Batman Dark Knight series was really starting to rake it in.
Well,
you only had Wonder Woman and Supergirl to pick from, basically.
Yeah, and I was actually about to touch on that a little bit because that's kind of where we're kind of heading, is that yes, there was very few female superheroes anyway. Mm-hmm. Why didn't they make Wonder Woman movie sooner? Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, it's an obvious choice, and they never did. I mean,
the years, I do remember some clamoring.
Well, and there was a wonderful Linda Carter TV show that I grew up watching as well, and it was fantastic, I thought.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I'm a little ashamed we hadn't mentioned that by now.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we were just talking movies, but.
Yeah, but that show was fantastic.
Oh, bring me back for that episode.
Linda Carter was fantastic as Wonder Woman. She's still kind of the main Wonder Woman in my.
Still pretty fantastic.
Yeah, but.
As anything.
But yeah, so they didn't really take the time to like make even the few superheroines that they had into a movie. I mean, they just totally skipped it until they got to Iron Man, you know?
Right.
I mean, you know, yes, he's a B-level guy, but that's a pretty cool character.
And anyway. And this is kind of speaking of Wonder Woman, this is also, so that had to be around 04 or 05 when, the Mad Max guy was making his Justice League movie, and they're you know, all that character design got crapped. So there was Wonder Woman and another female in that superhero,
there's just been like this. They did Superman in the very early '80s, late '70s, Supergirl, they kind of squeezed in there. And for us that were hungry for superhero movies, there weren't any. We watched Supergirl, this horrible movie. And I watched it many times, and I remember liking it. I don't remember not liking it. You know, now it's about 30 years gap between the last time I'd seen it, but I remember liking that movie. And so there was just nothing, right? There was a Dolph Lundgren Punisher in there, and then that's kind of it as far as, well, and he's arguably not a superhero either. But anyway, comic book movies were just gone.
Didn't you have a David Hasselhoff, Nick Fury movie in there?
I did not.
Yeah.
Did that ever get made?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. No,
that might have been a TV
that.
Thing.
Okay.
The Flash was on TV.
The Flash. Yeah, I watched that, you know, because we were hungry for superheroes.
And right. for you young for kids, action. There was another Flash on TV.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Long time ago.
And he actually plays Flash again in the new show. I don't know if you were aware of that.
Oh, of course I was aware of that.
Okay, anyway. So, anyway, there's this large gap of superhero live-action stuff, and then there's especially large gap between female live-action superhero stuff. Yeah. And so they end up going for some of the B-level, C-level, D-level supermen, superhero men. That's why we got... You know, Black Panther and Iron Man and all of those guys.
Ant-Man has two movies.
But good
point. You know, and also a point in the 60s, Ant-Man was kind of like their guy. He was a lot bigger than you might realize now. He was one of the original founders of the Avengers, right? Mm-hmm. And he had, I think, at least one of his own title that was a big seller. And but eventually, Captain America and Iron Man came into vogue and kind of pushed Ant-Man to the wayside. They're like, he's not that. I mean, he only really grows big and small and that's all he does. So he's clearly
a D-level
like Namor
character. You know?
Yeah, these days.
But still, I mean, always and still and always will be. He'll always be under. You know, he's under Captain America, under Iron Man, under
when,
Hulk,
when
under
the
Thor.
Studio money people well, are I mean, green lighting something.
Technically, Ant-Man at that size, he's sell. Under everybody. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to gloss over my size joke, but he's under everybody. He's an ant.
Yeah. And so, absolutely, I don't want to let the applause die down from that joke.
Thanks for having me.
But this is where we are now, where we burned through the two dominant female superheroes already. Yeah. Supergirl's on a popular show.
We savored it. It was
Wonder
about 30
Woman.
Years.
Yeah. Wonder Woman's a huge hit. Supergirl TV show is killing it. Now we're finally at the B-level superhero, female superhero.
Leading
boom.
A blockbuster.
Correct. Yep. Finally, they've caught up. And
an early spring blockbuster, but nonetheless.
It's personified in the Captain Marvel movie. Now, I've seen it. Jimmy's seen it.
I have.
Shay, you haven't seen it yet?
I haven't seen it
yet.
Okay.
You know, I don't want to get into a big movie review. That's not what this show is about. But what I would like to kind of touch on is, you know, look at how far it's come. Now, we don't have a large sample size. You know, by the way that I've defined it anyway, there's three movies. There's Supergirl, Wonder Woman, and Captain Marvel. Okay. Look at where we are now and look at the quality difference between Supergirl, Wonder Woman, and Captain Marvel. It's something else.
Well, yeah, I'm pretty sure Marvel steamrolled this project pretty quick once they saw the success of Wonder Woman, right? And that's going to open up for a lot more female
even if it's the B-level kind.
Anyone. Like, spoilers, if you haven't seen it, I think there's Carol Danvers' friend. I don't remember her name. The one that piloted the ship kind of at the end. Again, major spoilers if you haven't seen this movie yet. But her little girl is going to... you remember her? Uh-huh. She ends up being somebody in the Marvel universe. She has at least three names, and I kind of predict that she's possibly going to take the Iron Man suit from Tony in Avengers... Infinity War, Finn, uh-huh. Ellie. But that's just my own prediction. I don't know. But
yeah.
She's definitely, because now there's a 35-year gap in the storyline, right, since Captain Marvel and this final Infinity War. So, yeah, she's definitely a player. So we're going to see, I guess my point is we're going to see a lot more female superheroes come just from that movie. Yeah.
That'll
have their
DC,
own solo projects.
I know, is already doing a Wonder Woman sequel. Sure.
Right. That comes out, I think, this year or next. The Wonder Woman 2, WW84.
So
that's one that would fit. Yeah. And then, actually, Marquee, let me ask, would you consider the Black Widow movie to be a female superhero movie?
I would, because she is established as an Avenger at this point.
Okay.
You know, now, if the Black Widow movie came out in 2010, it would have been a B-level movie. I mean, a B-level superhero.
Is Black Widow a superhero? Excuse me?
I beg your pardon, fellas.
She's an Avenger.
This is what I wanted to provoke.
Well, she would be as much of a superhero as Batman is. He's just a normal human that can fight.
What say you, Lazinski?
I agree 100%. Yeah. I think that's what puts him above all the other superpowered guys. He is just a guy.
Yeah. I mean, there is this like...
But a hero nonetheless.
If we kind of go back a little bit and look at how the woman was presented in Supergirl, which even though she's the most powerful being, was constantly trapped, was fumbling, was the Eve, who ate the apple, right? Instead, it was like this little orb that escaped and almost doomed the whole world, right? You know, so like she's like the cause of all the problems. She's the most powerful person on Earth because, you know, Superman's not present anymore, but yet she's always helpless and just barely being able to like overcome all this stuff. She's not really that strong of a character. And I mean that metaphorically, she's not that strong of a character.
Yeah.
And then
almost like a baby deer learning to walk.
Yeah, it's really, and there's some whimsy to it, and it's kind of adorable too. But then you get to Captain Marvel and how that character is presented, and there's at least three or four songs in it that are all about women power and about like we can overcome, and like that's a movie where she's constantly trying to break that glass ceiling. You know, like she's trying to rise above all this stuff. It makes it a real central part of the story, and I think that's where the movies are going. This fourth wave or fifth wave of Marvel, it's going to be about the disenfranchised finally having a say and finally having the power, I think.
Hey.
I think that's how far we've come.
That's heavy, bro. Yeah, that's heavy. Yeah. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, and why? And you know, so I just read this. Was an article. I don't remember. It might have been in Hollywood.com or what's the popular one?
Deadline.
Maybe.
Bleeding Cool.
It was on Bleeding Cool, but it was basically matching up. Like, the Black Panther is going to be the new Captain America in the way that the films are projected.
In the new wave?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And Captain Marvel is the new Captain America, I believe, in the way that she's presented.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were to watch both of the movies, they're both structured the same. You know, Captain America is like Captain Marvel. And then the Black Panther is like Iron Man. Wait, did I mess that up? No, I think that's correct. And so anyway, this new wave of superhero movie is going to be the inverse of what started it all, right? It was Thor, Captain Marvel. I mean, Thor, Captain America.
I think it was
Iron Man.
Captain America was first, right, I think?
No, Iron Man was the first movie. Yeah, yeah. But then they ended up making the movie Captain America about the first Avenger, which takes place earlier. Anyway, I don't want to get into all that. Point is, the movies have come a long way, you know, and this is the beginning of it. We've been kind of ready for this since 1984. I'm looking forward to it. And
well, they're willing to sell us this product.
Yeah.
And I think they're only willing to do that because we've made it clear we're willing to buy it.
Yeah.
So a pat on the back for all of us, gentlemen.
Oh, for just for three dudes good, just finally allowing this to happen.
Good work for us, boy.
We're gonna let him. Yeah. We're gonna let's let him in the treehouse.
Well, yeah. Again, oh, that's like terrible. Somebody's got to sew my socks, right?
Oh God! See, that's just so. All on that note, I think
so we're hopeful that
did I missed the point.
the trend. Oh God, the trend appears to have been positive. I hope it continues. But just wake me up when they finally make an Irish superhero. Moving on, we've got...
What's his name in the X-Men? Is the Banshee. Isn't he? I'm pretty sure he's Irish.
I don't know.
Nothing.
I do.
Nothing worse than when you make a maybe one-person list.
Yeah, that's
to try to address this problem.
All right.
Some of my best friends are Irish superheroes, sir.
Well, that's why I can use the I word.
This is why I can say leprechaun. No, you can't, boy.
No, you can't.
All right, listen, we've got precious little patience left, I think, of our audience. But I know you guys want to talk about our presence coming up at WonderCon 2019 in sunny Anaheim, California.
That's right. This is now, let's just fast forward to our WonderCon preview show. I'm going on one day, I'm going on Saturday, and I'm going there because I'm going to talk to the Cobra Kai cast. It's all the Cobra Kai guys, so it's Johnny and Bobby and Tommy and what's the other guy's name? I'm making those up.
Yeah, anyway, Tommy so, lost Chad, me. You had me.
There a Chad?
Seems like it should be a
there's
Chad.
A Johnny. There's a Johnny.
Martin Cove's going to be there.
Ah, friend of the show, Martin Cove.
No, he's never.
We never
been.
Talked to him.
We've talked about him with other guests, ooh, but he has eluded me.
Friend of the friend of the show.
Well, I would say he's squandered his chance. Please don't talk to him.
No,
don't
I'm
even make eye contact.
If you see that guy,
yeah. But no, my WonderCon is going to be cut very, very, very short. I just don't have a lot of time. But I'm going to go on Saturday. I'm going to walk around the convention floor. I don't have a lot of previews to give. I'm all out of previews. Johnny, how is your WonderCon going to go? What are you looking forward to?
Well, I will ask Jimmy when I see him.
Jimmy. I said Johnny. That's Johnny right. Hexler here. Jimmy. Well,
so as of this date, I'm booked to talk to a couple of people, the cast of Cloak and Dagger, which I'll have to do some homework and get caught up on that show. And I'm going to talk to the cast of the reboot, Child's Play reboot.
Chucky's back.
And I'm also going to talk to the cast of the Justice League versus the Fatal Five. Once again, Kevin Conroy, my old buddy. And the original Justice League guy, voice actors will be there.
That's
I'm
the
also
voice of Batman right there.
Right. And I'm pretty much synonymous with Batman at this day. And with this being the 80-year anniversary of Batman, I hope we get some good quotes from him. But I'm really excited to talk to the cast of The Tick. Is there a big presence at this year's WonderCon?
They're on the ticket. They're actually on the badge this year.
So I interviewed them before season one came out 2 years ago at Comic-Con, so I'm excited to talk to them again.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. And find out why they haven't called me since.
Well, and the show's been renewed. They're already working on the second
season.
I'm
pretty sure the second season's in the bag. It comes out April 5th.
Okay.
So that's got to be at least half of it's in the bag, the first half of it. And
that's how they did the first season. So
I think they're going to dump all of them out at once this time.
The whole season?
Yeah.
Instead of the two halves?
I think they're going to do it all at once. I think I heard something about that. I'm not 100% sure if that was the movie that I heard it for. I mean, that was the show, but I think so. So be on the lookout for that. If you want to go on a binge, Tick it up.
Are you guys a fan of that property at all, The Tick? Did you watch the cartoon?
Oh, yeah. I like the cartoon, the short-lived Fox series. Each iteration seems different, though.
It's something that kind of impresses me.
Ben Edlund, I know, does all of them.
And I want to ask him about that, why they changed. So, I mean, it's got to be like maybe the previous guys own the rights to certain characters, so you can't use Die Fledermaus again, or, you know, you've got to change that.
Actually, I'm under the impression and I could be wrong about this, but I feel like I had read somewhere that, in an interview with him, he just said, no, this time around, I wanted to make it seem like this.
Different. Yeah. Yeah.
I would do it the same way, too. Like, I would I would, I'm going to say his name on this podcast, too. this is what George Lucas does. He's like, I'm just going to change it. I'm just gonna change it. I want to do it again. Yeah. And it's all sacred and untouchable as far as we're concerned. But to these guys, they're like, you know, I wrote this. I created. I can do whatever the hell I want with it. You know. And if I'm not happy with it, I'll just redo it. I like that about artists. I love that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that sounds like fun. I'm looking forward to.
Well, I didn't hear if Jimmy likes a tick. What is your problem, buddy?
My problem? Oh, I love it. I love every.
That's better.
I love the comic book. I love the cartoon, the original animated series. I don't know if I love the Patrick Warburton iteration. But
good name pull. I would have never guessed his name.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. And I really do like the new series. I'm interested. I want to find out why the Tick's costume keeps changing. And I mean, I just got a lot of questions. I'm excited to talk to those guys again.
Yeah. I think it's one of those. It's that classic, like, we're hungry for a superhero show, but it stands on its own. And even like yeah. it doesn't really need to be a superhero movie.
I really enjoy any sort of take on a superhero trope that's either comical or serious or maybe a horror story or something. Like, you can't have Superman doing the dumb stuff that the Tick does. So that allows you to create this universe with all these goofy versions of all your favorite superheroes that can just do. I mean, I really enjoy that exploration.
Or just a reality where the take on what a reality of that contains superheroes.
What it
would be
like.
Like.
Yeah. I really like. He's like, got a
I'll
lot.
I'll watch
of...
Mystery Men to this day.
Yeah, that also.
And every time I see
that's
it, like,
really...
it's a slightly worse movie. the seams are really showing. But I
there's
still
a lot of money on
it.
The screen. I mean, I could. There's some positive things.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah.
I love that movie too.
That's a good movie.
Yeah, The Spleen. That's the Paul Rubens guy.
Yeah,
that was a good one. Yeah. Saturday, I'm going to be there. You're going to be there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
We'll definitely hook up.
So we're going to try to hook up. We're going to try to capture some audio for you guys together. We'll bring you whatever audio we can, but look forward to hearing more about that as the year goes.
Stay tuned, true believers.
We still have a couple
of
more shows.
Come down to Anaheim. Hook up with us.
Yeah, and
I'm sure we'll get lots of swag at WonderCon to be given away on our next WonderCon wrap-up episode.
We are bound to have a lot of swag. And this year's going by really fast. We're going to probably be able to do 2 to 3 more shows before Comic-Con. So we're going to try to get back in the studio soon. We're
producer disclaimer, 2 to 3 shows, only an estimate.
Yeah, I mean, two to four.
Your mileage may vary.
2 to 5 at the most. July's going to come quick. I mean, it's just right around the corner. Let us know what you guys think. I'm at Stay Classy SDCC.
Oh, sure. Please hit me up at SDBatman66 on most forms of social media.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody just leave me alone.
Yeah.
And I think that's about enough of this.
That's it. Thanks, guys.
Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
Oh, this is enough of this.